Hi, I'm Doug Gordon, and you're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. During the 1970s, Will Burch was a drummer and songwriter for the Kersall Flyers and The Records. Later, he became a record producer. Now Will has put together the definitive biography of rocker Nick Lowe. Lowe pioneered pub rock, power pop, and new wave. He's best known for his songs Cruel to Be Kind and What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding. Dubbed the Jesus of Cool, Lowe's also known for his production work for Elvis Costello and his successful turn into a more stripped-down singer-songwriter. Will Burch's book is called Cruel to Be Kind, The Life and Music of Nick Lowe.
I think that Nick's influences obviously are early country music. When he was a boy, he grew up living to a large extent on Royal Air Force bases in Europe when his father was an officer in the Royal Air Force. So he did a lot of travelling as a child, and he often stayed on air bases where there were American airmen stationed. This is in the 1950s. And I guess those big air bases had a radio station that played music for the Americans. So Nick got to hear early country music in the 1950s, 1960s. And when he then sort of went to school and later college, he mixed with the crowd that would have been interested in the soul music of the mid-60s, you know, people like James Brown and Sam and Dave and Otis Redding, The Temptations, etc. So he was doubly exposed to both black and white American music. And as he has said himself, I think some of his aspirations are to sort of fuse those two genres, if you like, to produce something of his own that's unique.
Yeah, you're right. And he's, with a lot of his most recent work, done kind of what we could call country soul, music that's part country and part soul, and managed to combine them to form something new.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of his favorite songwriters is Arthur Alexander, a black singer, as we know, who really, I suppose, if you wanted to say, he was in the sort of soul category. But some of Arthur Alexander's songs are extremely pop, you know, like You Better Move On, which the Rolling Stones covered. And I know that Nick uses that song when he does a warm-up at the microphone before he plays a live performance. So he obviously loves that. He loves Arthur Alexander. And Alexander is probably a good example of somebody who's a soul-slash-bluesy kind of singer, but who has a sort of bit of a twang to it as well.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you mention Arthur Alexander, because on that Arthur Alexander tribute album, Nick does a version of In the Middle of It All, and I think that's one of Nick's finest vocal performances.
And it looks like my life is about to fall. I tried to build a shell around it, but sadness has found it, and I'm in the middle of it all.
In August of 1976, Nick released the first single on the indie British record label Stiff Records, the self-proclaimed world's most flexible label. The A-side was a song called So It Goes, and the B-side, of course, was Heart of the City. What is your take on these two songs, Nick's debut as a solo artist?
Well, they're both extremely good songs, although different in style, and it's not too hard to detect the influences. I mean, I don't want to sort of accuse Nick of stealing, let's say, some of his tunes, but he'll be the first to admit he is influenced. And in Heart of the City, you do hear quite a bit of influence. Jonathan Richman and the Modern Lovers, Roadrunner. Roadrunner going faster miles an hour, you know that record, and Heart of the City. You hear a big influence of Richman in that song, but Nick made it his own. So It Goes was similar in some ways to a couple of records Nick would have heard around 75, 76. Thin Lizzy had a hit record with The Boys Are Back in Town, Shuffle Rhythm. And in fact, Nick heard that song every night when he worked as road manager for Graham Parker and The Rumour, who opened up for Thin Lizzy on a UK tour. And also at that time, you also had Steely Dan's Reeling in the Years. Nick does actually admit that that was a bit of an influence on him before, so it goes.
I remember the night the kid cut off his right arm. Did a bit to save a bit of power. He got 50,000 watts in a big acoustic tower.
In the late 1970s, Nick Lowe became friends with the Welsh guitarist, singer, and producer Dave Edmonds, and they formed this band called Rockpile with guitarist Billy Bremner and drummer Terry Williams. The band played on Nick's second solo album, Labor of Lust, which featured the hit single Cruel to Be Kind. Can you tell me about this song?
Well, I think when Nick wrote Cruel to Be Kind, that was recorded with Brinsley Schwartz but not released. He says he was heavily influenced by the Chi-Town sound of Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes. They wanted to make a kind of soul record. I think that Ian Gom helped out with a couple of chords on that.
Oh, I can't take another heartache. Oh, you say you're my friend, but I'm at my wit's end. You say your love is bona fide, but that don't coincide with the things that you do. And when I ask you to explain, you say you gotta be cruel to be kind in the right measure. Cruel to be kind is a very good sign. Cruel to be kind means that I love you, baby. You gotta be cruel to be kind. Whoa.
It was Greg Geller, who was the A&R guy from Columbia Records, who almost insisted that Nick make a version of Cruel to Be Kind to go on the Labour of Lust album. Cruel to Be Kind, which became quite a big hit in America, well, all around the world really, really benefited from Dave Edmonds' production skills and vocal harmonies and backing arrangement. Whereas Nick might have sort of shied away from putting too much icing on it, Dave, I think, in his instinctive hit-making second sense, realised, hey, man, here's a hit, let's really work on it, and they did.
You say you gotta be cruel to be kind in the right measure. Cruel to be kind, that's a very good sign. Cruel to be kind means that I love you.
I remember reading this great quote about Rockpile, and it was something along the lines of Rockpile was fueled by the same energy source as the punks, but they could play rings around them. And you have this quote from Clem Burke, the drummer of Blondie. Rockpile opened for them on a tour, and Burke says Rockpile was the world's greatest rock and roll band at that time. Would you agree with that?
Well, they were incredibly exciting. You said punk rock there. I mean, I suppose the Ramones fall into that camp, and for me the Ramones live were one of the great turns of that period. I mean, they were fabulous. I would say if you want straight ahead fast rock and roll with great guitar licks, harmonies and a fantastic swinging drummer, I still don't think there's anybody on the planet who could have beaten Rockpile, and probably not today. I mean, they were very, very exciting live.
Rockpile broke up in 1981, and Nick carried on with a solo career, but he reached this crossroads in his career. He decided that he would turn getting older into a distinct advantage. How did he do this?
Well, he's a thinker. He's not in any great hurry. And because he's not in any great hurry, and because his brain works in a certain way, which is slightly contrary to the way a lot of people would think, Nick, I think, took a step back and thought, well, either I can carry on with my sort of rock and roll shtick, or I can change course and I can be the very first musician from the rock and pop music background who doesn't hide the fact that he's getting old. In fact, I'll turn it to my advantage. Not that he wanted his hair to drop out and go, well, he was already grey, but
yeah.
Not that he wanted to look like an old man. He's still got bags of style, but he just wanted to take things to a level that I don't think anybody had really done before. There may be other examples, but he really did make a thing of being, you know, in his 60s and being like a very sort of non-rock and roll type artist that sings rock and roll songs. And I interviewed Elvis Costello for the book. Elvis was very complimentary about Nick's embracing his age and his image, and said, you know, who would you rather be, Nick Lowe or Steven Tyler of Aerosmith? He said, Steven Tyler's a great character, but isn't that a rather lot of work every morning?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great quote. One of the things that allowed Nick to reinvent himself was this unexpected financial windfall that he received in 1992, I think. Can you tell us what happened?
Nick Lowe received quite a lot of royalties when one of his early songs, What's So Funny About Peace, Love and Understanding, probably his second most well-known song that he'd previously recorded with Brinsley Schwartz in 75, was picked up for the soundtrack of the Bodyguard movie, which was obviously, as everybody knows, Whitney Houston and Kevin Costner. And it was a big, big movie at the box office. And like most movies, it had an accompanying soundtrack album. The way that came about was that Curtis Stigers, the American singer, jazz-inclined singer and musician, he had been performing that song in his club set for some time because he loved Nick's song. Curtis's version went on the soundtrack album, and that album went on to sell millions and millions. In fact, if you look it up, you'll find Arista Records claim it sold 45 million units worldwide. So one day the postman turned up with a rather large check for Nick.
As I walk this wicked world, searching for light in the darkness of insanity, oh yeah, I ask myself, is all hope gone? Is there only pain, hatred and misery? Oh yes, and each time I feel like this inside, there's one thing I wanna know, what's so funny about peace, love and understanding? What's so funny about peace, love and understanding? What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding?
So because of this financial windfall, Nick was able to take his time with writing and recording songs, and he really reinvented his sound. He came up with this blend of country, soul, and blues, and he introduced this new sound on his 1994 album, The Impossible Bird. As you write in your book, the songs on this album were so strong that three of them were covered by Rod Stewart, Johnny Cash, and Diana Ross. One of the standout songs is called Where's My Everything? What inspired Nick to write this one?
Where's My Everything was a phrase that came out of the blue one night when he and his girlfriend were sitting around, and Tracy, his girlfriend then, made herself a cup of tea, and Nick said, where's my cup of tea? And then he went, where's my newspaper? Where's my pen? Where's my crossword puzzle book? And he said, where's my everything? And that was the inspiration for that song.
Where is the beautiful family home that I was promised on the news at 10? Like my personal place in the sun, it never happened alone. And as for the greatest love of all, that's been sworn in a billion lies, and is mine by birthright, of it I've seen none. Tell me where's my everything? Tell me where's my everything? Tell me where's my everything? Tell me where's my everything?
And one of the best songs from this second act is called I Trained Her to Love Me. I asked Nick about this song in an interview a while back.
This song just got a reaction straight away from the audience. It's never happened to me before. And sort of divided the audience as well. That's a lot of the women realised that it was a sort of sympathetic song, you know, that I was sort of making fun of this character. And a lot of the men thought I actually sort of believed it. And there was a lot of kind of punching the air and saying, you know, yeah, Nick, way to go, man. As if I had struck some fantastic blow for a men's lib.
What do you think of I Trained Her to Love Me?
Well, it's one of my absolute favourite songs of Nick's. It was just sort of a fantastic twist on relationships. I mean, it's quite audacious. It's quite conceited, really, but with his tongue a little bit in his cheek, but not too far, to take it to the level where, well, I made her love me so I could then ditch her, is quite conceited, but it's got enough humour in it that he can just about get away with it. I remember the first time I heard that, it was at a concert in London. He was singing solo acoustic in a big hall, the Barbican Theatre, maybe a couple of thousand people in the audience. And he put it in the middle of his set and you could hear a pin drop. And you could, as you sat there listening to this song being sung to the audience probably for the first time, there were men and women around. You could feel people like tightening up.
That's
with,
good.
What's he saying, you know?
And the skip in her step when we're both out walking in the neighborhood. This one's almost done. Now to watch her fall apart, I trained her to love me so I can go ahead and break her heart.
Will Birch, thank you very much.
Well, Doug, it's been a great pleasure to talk to you, and all good luck for future broadcasting.
Thank you, Will. I'm going to need it.
I should be ashamed. So what? I'm only paying back womankind for all the grief I got.
Will Birch is the author of Cruel to Be Kind, The Life and Music of Nick Lowe. Find out more at wpr.org/beta. Speaking of Nick Lowe, one of my favorite things about Nick is his mischievous sense of humor. Back in the 70s, he came up with a crazy idea to get out of a record contract. He recorded a tribute to the Bay City Rollers, which he hoped would irritate his record company. There was only one problem. They loved the song and asked for a follow-up. But perhaps my favorite example of Nick's mirth and mayhem is his 1990 song, All Men Are Liars. It features this clever couplet. Well, do you remember Rick Astley? He had a big fat hit. It was ghastly. Nick was Rickrolling before it became an internet meme. I guess you could call that Nickrolling. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Charles Yu, Jonathan Katz, and Will Birch. If you want to hear it again or binge on past episodes, subscribe to the Beta Podcast via Apple Podcasts or wherever you catch your favorite pods. And make sure to let us know what you think by leaving a rating or a comment. You can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta or on Twitter at @WPRBeta. Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
Well, does my voice sound booming to you? Do you recognize a healthy timbre?
Our executive producer, nay showrunner, is Adam Friedrich.
Well, you know, I want to be the guy that when, you know, at any point in any conversation I'm having over the radio, I can press a button and like a wacky sound comes on. Like a ba-dong.
And thanks to you, our alphas. We'll see you next week. I'm Doug Gordon.
I'm more like an entertainer. I mean, there's a lot of news out there, but that's not what people want to hear.